Support comes from ProMusica Colorado Chamber Orchestra, presenting Holiday Moods, a performance celebrating the holidays, featuring Vivaldi's Fall and Winter with violinist Yumi Wang Williams, broadcasting online December 5th and 6th. Tickets and information can be found at promusicacolorado.org.
Tonight's program was recorded on August 8th, 2017.
Thanks for tuning in to KGNU Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. My name is Riley, and I'm your host this evening for Cabaret. And I am thrilled to be in the studio with Rachel Bayman. Welcome, Rachel.
Thanks. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Great to see you again.
Yeah, I'm really excited to be here. Thanks for having me on the show.
Absolutely. So, love for you to kick it off with a couple tunes.
Sure. Okay, we'll start out with one called Shame.
Many times I've passed the church, wish that I believed. Many times I've looked around, wish that I could see the power that was safely guided and someday set me free. And I long to know the meaning of triumphant jubilee. Well, white men write books about faith and healing love. And old white men look happily on to others from above. In the name of sweet religion, they would lay their claims on me and ask me to be grateful for triumphant jubilee. They want to bring me shame. Well, there ain't no shame. You better look away, bow your head and pray, 'cause it won't feel shame.
Really great.
Thank you.
I understand that is the title track of your most recent album that you just released.
Yeah, that's that is the title track. Album's called Shame, and it came out in June, so it's still pretty new. And these are the first time I'm coming to Colorado playing this kind of material, so it's pretty exciting. Over here playing the banjo, I have the fabulous George Jackson.
G'day, everybody.
Since You can't see me or him.
And what's the next tune you're going to be playing?
This one is called Thinking on You. And I wrote this one when I was spending some time on Salmon Beach in Tacoma, Washington, which is a really beautiful place. And I had lucked out in a friend of a friend offering me this spot to stay, which was sort of a house on top of the water. So the tide would come in under the house and you go out, you know, back under. So you kind of felt like you were floating all night. And the whole time I was there, I had been told there was whales in the bay, but I'm pretty terrible at whale watching, it turns out, because I kept seeing sticks and getting really excited, thinking they were whales, but in fact, I did not see any whales. And that kind of situation made it into this song as well.
I think that's kind of a great metaphor. I mean, if you get excited, if it's the same kind of excitement,
exactly.
You know, it's kind of like part of storytelling. Like, does it have to be true to really mean something?
That is a great point. Yeah, because it's sort of a love song, but it's sort of about longing for something and not really being sure if it's, you know, it's real. So it's just like the whales. You're right. You just made my song so much deeper than I even knew.
That's my goal.
Thanks.
Banjo Live.
When I'm waking, you you've somehow slipped just out of reach. And the bed that I've made is full of secrets to keep. I'm sitting here thinking on you. I'm sitting here thinking on you. I'm sitting here thinking on you, darling. Who are you thinking of? I'm sitting here thinking on you, darling. Who are you thinking of?
You know, Rachel, what I love about your album is that you have so many different flavors in your songs. Like, to me, that last one totally had a John Hartford feel to it.
And, oh, thanks.
You know, Shame kind of has like a Sam Bush groove to it underneath. You know, it's funny. I had a literature professor in college that said, you know, if you want to sound like Eric Clapton on guitar, you can't listen to Eric Clapton. You have to listen to who did Eric Clapton listen to.
Right. And, that makes a lot of sense.
And so, you know, I'm hearing, you know, these things in your songs, but, you know, I didn't write them. And to your own ear, how would you say, who should people listen to if they listen to your album and they really love what you do, who would you say that they should listen to?
Well, that's a really interesting point you make, because, I mean, I think it is really important to go all the way back as far as you can, you know, in any style to kind of, like, get a full grasp of who, you know, those people were drawing on. But I feel like the lyrical content of this album, I mean, it really was very much influenced by John Hartford, but also by, like, Courtney Barnett, people that are kind of more contemporary. And I think that because I always played old-time music, I kind of can't escape that sensibility. So, to me, things that sound very much like modern things that I'm hearing, you know, are still kind of coming out with this, like, old-time influence. So, I mean, I think that just studying old-time music, studying, you know, old country music, I think that I've kind of been surrounded by a ton of old country music just because of living in Nashville and having all these friends that are obsessive country songwriters. And I definitely don't consider myself a country songwriter, but country kind of has the art of the song, you know. That's kind of an amazing thing about that genre. It's all about the perfectly crafted song. So I think that, yeah, old country music, Townes Van Zandt, Hank Williams, John Hartford, Courtney Barnett, those are my favorites, you know.
Very cool. Yeah, I love how it came out, and, you know, it just all seems to be so seamlessly kind of braided together in your album, and you've been getting a lot of attention. You know, when you look up Rachel Baiman on the internet, you come up with, you know, you were featured on NPR's All Songs Considered and Pace Magazine and The Bluegrass Situation, and, you know, there's handfuls of others that are just, you know, you're just kind of everywhere.
Thanks. It's been exciting, because, you know, I was excited to share this music. Because it was, like, such an amazing process to make it. So it's fun to finally have it out in the world and, you know, hear people's thoughts about it, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. So, great. Well, what do you have planned next for us?
Well, speaking of all the different flavors, we'll do the kind of most outside of my norm flavored song. It's a little bit surfy, which is not a genre I know anything about. But I wrote this song with a couple good friends, and it just happened that way, and now I just enjoy it. It's kind of about being stuck in a rut and being in denial that you're stuck in a rut and that your life is flying by before your eyes, perhaps. It's called Getting Ready to Start Getting Ready.
happen to steal. This isn't for long, it's just a phase till I run myself out of this wheel. I'm gonna run myself out of this wheel.
I'd love to hear more about your album. I mean, I feel like a lot of times albums are sort of these projects that are bigger than ourselves and, you know, bigger than the individual songs. And, you know, you've been getting so much attention for it. And, you know, I've seen a lot of praise for the political themes within it and whatnot. And I'm just curious, what was that process like for you of, you know, how it started and how it evolved?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. I mean, when you say that albums are so often, you know, bigger than ourselves, and I think that part of what I felt like the magic was of this album was that I just really didn't have a plan for what it was going to be, or what I was going to do with it, or what the purpose of it was. And because of that, there was kind of no preconceived notion. I think, you know, I've done a lot of work in bands, and when you're in a band, you usually are going, okay, it's time to make an album, and we want this album to be this certain way, or it needs to be out by this time, and all this kind of, it needs to represent our live show, blah, blah, blah. And this one was just very, very open. I just, what happened was I had written a few songs, Shame being the first one, and I think because of the political nature of that song, but also because it felt like something that just I wanted to sing under my own name. It felt kind of personal, like it's such a personal thought, and kind of like, especially not being in a band of females, you know, I just felt like I wanted that to be my, you know, me saying that. And so I'd written that, and then there was a few other songs that I just felt like were more personal to me, that I wanted to kind of do a project outside of 10 String Symphony, which is what I was spending most of my time on in at the time, and that's still going. But I had been listening to these albums that Andrew Marlin was producing, and Andrew Marlin is part of a great band called Mandolin Orange, and I was just noticing how beautiful the soundscapes were in all of these different albums, and I was like, oh, the common factor is Andrew Marlin. Like, you know, this is what's going on in this specific studio in North Carolina. So, you know, I randomly got a text from Andrew one day about some random gig, and I was like, I want to make an album with you, please. Like, it was so random, you know, and he was like, all right, well, you know, an album doesn't have to be as far away as you think. And I was like, all right, great. So, I just booked 2 days in the studio, in North Carolina, and I drove down there with four songs. And we spent one day going through the songs, and then we recorded for 2 days, and it was like 10 o'clock in the morning until 1 or 2 at night. And just crazy energy, just like working all day, hardly stopping, and just being so excited the whole time about what was happening. And so we got four tracks recorded in those 2 days, and then we're like, all right, we gotta finish this. Like, this is awesome, you know? Just, it was so easy to create something that I loved, and I've never had that experience in the studio before. So that was kind of the beginning, and then I spent the whole rest of that year, you know, going back and forth, and I would go down for 2 or 3 days in between his tour schedule and my tour schedule and record a few songs, and then we got to the mixing process and blah, blah, blah. So I think the common thread of the material was just very, very much personal songs. I felt like I wanted it to encompass a wide range of aspects of a person, you know, like there's so many things that you can have your love songs, you can have your political songs, like it's all part of the same thing, you know? So that was kind of what I was thinking about towards the end when I was going, is it finished? What does it need? You know, but generally it was very much just a purely artistic, this is what I want to do, this is what I want to hear, go kind of thing, which was really amazing. And I wish I could just do it all the time.
That's great. Well, yeah, I'm really enjoying it. And for our listeners out there who want to hear your whole album, where's the best place for them to access that, to hear that studio album?
Yeah, I mean, it just depends on your personal preference of listening, but you can find digital or physical copies at my website, which is rachelbaiman.com, or anywhere on the internet. You can get digital, you can hear it on Spotify, you can hear it on iTunes, you know, whatever floats your boat.
And would you mind spelling your last name for people?
Yeah, sure. It's Baiman. Okay. I don't know why it's pronounced Baiman, but it is.
And for people who are enjoying this kind of stripped-down version of your album, of, you know, the duo, you mentioned you had some other shows here in Colorado. Where can people hear you live, aside from right now?
I'll be here in Boulder tomorrow at this awesome venue called the Star House, which I'm really excited to check out. It's like some kind of temple, and it's supposed to be really beautiful. So that's going to be a really special, totally acoustic show, kind of a unique way to hear the music, I think. I think the show starts at 7:30, and that's at the Star House in Boulder. And then on Thursday night, I'm going to be at the Globe Hall in Denver. And that is a show with another band called The Wind in the Wave. So that should be pretty cool. And for anybody who has, you know, cowboy relatives, we'll be playing in Pinedale, Wyoming on Saturday. So
very cool. Yeah, and I heard tomorrow's show is with Natalie Tate and Gabriel Louise, some local favorites around here.
Seems like it's going to be an awesome lineup. I'm really excited to hear those two.
Cool. Well, what tune are you planning on playing next for us?
This is called Something to Lose. It's a love song, but kind of in a...
Some have just begun. I can never be careful enough. All my binds have come undone. Used to get so angry, wishing the world would just pass me by. But now I'm grateful, now I'm scared. Now I've got something to lose. I used to be so weightless, bouncing on the top of a long free fall. But it's so heavy, now you're real. Now I'm got something to lose. But lovers, some are overspent, and some have just begun. I can never be careful enough. All my binds have come undone. Lovers, some are overspent, and some have just begun. I can never be careful enough. All my binds have come undone.
Support comes from Westward, presenting Westward's Feast to Go, a celebration of Denver's restaurant scene, one bite at a time. Thursday, May 13th from 4 to 8 p.m. at the Stanley Marketplace in Aurora. Tickets and information at westwardfeast.com.
Tonight's cabaret featuring Nashville-based Rachel Bayman was recorded on August 8th, 2017.
You have to drink a lot of water up here in Colorado.
Yes, we've been discovering that over the last couple of days.
Well, and I understand it's pretty rough to be on the road on tour, but not only on the road, but in the skies. I heard you were just in France, Rachel?
Yeah, the duo that I play in 10 String Symphony, we had a festival in France, which was really, really amazing. But yeah, it was like 2 days in a plane and recovering from jet lag, 2 days of festival. 2 days back in a plane and recovering from jet lag. But we decided, my bandmate Christian and I decided that we were going to like kick jet lag before we got back. So we just stayed up all night at the festival and then got on the plane at like 5 o'clock in the morning to start heading back to the States so that we could adjust our time clock, which kind of worked. But it was so miserable going through that airport. I was like, I'm never again. Need sleep.
Well, you sound amazing, and you know, you look, you know, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, so I think it worked.
Thank you. It's coffee.
Yeah. Well, you know, and to me, it's fascinating to watch both of you seamlessly transition between fiddle, banjo, and guitar.
I suppose for those listening who can't see what's going on here, but Rachel and I have been swapping banjos, guitars, and fiddles, now fiddles, around the place. So yes, we have been, we do play sort of a variety of instruments. Both of us actually mainly play the banjo and the fiddle, and we have the guitar along here as well.
On that note, George has stolen my pick.
Oh, here it is. Well, and I'm curious, you know, I've had people ask me, like, oh, you know, isn't it hard to, you know, learn all these different instruments? And it seems like once you learn one, they kind of get easier, especially in the string family.
Definitely. I mean, I'm really glad I started with the fiddle because I think that's a hard one to get to later.
It gets easier from there, maybe.
I think so. Like I did fiddle and then banjo and then guitar. And I mean, you do, as you know, like, you know, you have some basic knowledge that, that translates. You understand chords and some theory and, like, why things are happening. And for me, like, as a fiddle player, I was always playing with banjos and guitars, so I kind of already had opinions about what I wanted them to do. Maybe for you too, George. I don't know.
That's great.
Yeah, for sure. I started on the fiddle myself and got into playing bluegrass music, which is what a lot of what I do personally. These days, yeah.
And who else do you play with, George?
I play with Missy Raines in the New Hip. That's my gig out of Nashville. I moved to Nashville a year ago from Australia. And I've been playing a bunch with Rachel over the last couple of months and also with Missy Raines and with a band called Front Country as well. So a variety of things, yeah.
Were you at Rocky Grass with Front Country?
I wasn't, no. I've been doing around a third of their stuff. They have a bit of a rotating cast of fiddlers. And
okay.
Yeah, I've been one. But no, I did not get to do the Rocky Grass.
George also has some has an amazing band called One Up, Two Down. It's just one of my favorite old-time bands. So y'all should check that out.
Just a reminder, you are tuned in to our live cabaret show on KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. And you're listening to Rachel Bayman and George here from Nashville. So I hope you're enjoying.
All right, well, we'll do this one that I kind of was inspired to create based on this Ishmael Reed poem. And if you haven't heard of Ishmael Reed, this poem is actually written on the side of the San Francisco Jazz Center. So I was out there and walking by it, and I was like reading this poem, and I was like, I love that so much. And the poem is called When I Die, I Will Go to Jazz. And as someone who is kind of doesn't really identify with any religious beliefs or anything, but I kind of have this conception of things that aren't totally rational through a love of music, you know. So sometimes I go, why am I doing this? I have no idea. You know, it's not like a rational decision. And that's why I kind of love this poem, because it just made complete sense. So I tried to expound on that thought in a song form. It's called Let Them Go to Heaven. Almost in tune. All right. Two, three, four. Let them go to heaven. Let them go to hell. If on earth I cannot last, I wanna go to jazz. Don't surround me with cherubim in their curled yellow lines, a place where there's no vodka on the rocks. And spare me the diet of honey and milk. In our high up 52nd Street, I hear voices in the finest silk. Stomp out all my sins.
death and go to hell. When my body leaves my soul, well, take me to rock and roll. Don't surround me with endless joy, an interrupted call. A place like that would know what to do with a snare, a kick, or a tom. Spare me the saving from my unholy life. 'Cause I can't feel that guitar burn if I can't hear the strife. Well, you saw angels singing sweet, soft hymns. When I've got rock to roll away my sins. When I've got rock to roll away my sins.
So I know we just joked a little bit about the struggles of the musician and the traveling musician. And I'm curious, you know, there's a lot of people who are pursuing music who think, you know, when I get that record deal, you know, that's going to be when I made it. And that's just going to solve all my problems. But I know that you have a record deal. And I'm curious, how has your experience sort of changed the way you've seen that? And what would you say to those people?
That's a really interesting question. I think that there are, you know, record deals are very different. You know, they can be a lot of things. And I've been really fortunate to be working with an awesome label called Free Dirt Records. And, you know, you hear all these horror stories of the past with artistic control and, you know, not being able to do what you want. And Free Dirt is a, you know, a small indie label, and they take artists that they already like what they're doing and, you know, try to help promote their music. And I think, you know, the whole industry has changed so much that those kind of old school record deals where you have a ton of money thrown behind you and you might blow up overnight, but at the same time you're kind of at the mercy of those people that are in control with the money. I think that those kind of record deals are very few and far between these days. I mean, I know that they still exist to some extent, but it's really not something that is around quite as much as it used to be, just because people aren't really making that much money off of selling albums. You know, it's all about performing live and all that stuff. So I guess what I would say to that question is just that it's always going to be a process, and it's always going to be a step-by-step thing, you know, one foot in front of the other. And it gradually, I mean, this is my experience, and perhaps people have had different experiences, but for me, working with a label for this album has been awesome. It's like the next step, you know, but it's not like a do or die, make or break situation. For me, like, my experience has always been that just you start somewhere and you work really hard, and then you get to point B, and then you work really hard and you get to point C. And by the time that when you're at point A, you're like, if I could only be at point B. And by the time you're at point B, you go, if I could only be at point C. So, you know, it always feels like it's taking too long and it's too hard and you're still not making any money and all that kind of stuff. So it's just, but then when you look back, you go, okay, cool. So, like, this has actually gotten a lot better. You know, I'm making a lot better music. My shows are better. I know what I'm doing. You know, I have people helping me out. This is great. So I think it's, you know, it's, if you're waiting for something to be like, this is the answer, this is why, this is when it's going to work, I don't think that exists, really. Maybe it does.
It seems to me like it kind of, you know, getting a label behind you just presents a whole bunch of new problems for you to solve that, you know.
That's true. It can. I mean, I think, yeah, it's just, it's a whole different
thing.
In
a good way.
It's the same with anything. If you really want a booking agent, then you get a booking agent, and then all you do is worry about how you're interacting with your booking agent, you know. So it's just a process.
All
All right, we're going to do one that was written by a good friend of mine named Michael Bowman. He's a great musician out of Georgia. And I think this is maybe one of the best songs that nobody's ever heard, which is great. So he was kind enough to let me record it. It's called Wicked Spell. When I got to Georgia, there was nothing but an empty house. And I wonder what the hell we were doing driving 500 miles in opposite directions. So I got some liquor and I drank till I was somewhere else. But I'm not closer, I'm farther away, and I'm still by myself. If you didn't, and I think I may have fell in love with you, honey. I am tired of decisions in this world. Let me drift, let me sow, let me try where the fields are sunny. Sweater, and I let you wear. Mm-hmm.
soak. Let me tread where fields are sunny.
That was really beautiful.
Thanks. I love that song so much. Kind of reminds me of a Ryan Adams song.
Yes.
Did you get that vibe?
Totally.
Yeah.
And did he originally write that on banjo? Because it's so conducive to the banjo.
Yeah, I love playing on the banjo. I think the version that he recorded, you know, it's got like electric guitar and drums, and he actually has these string parts, and the string parts are the ones going the. And I converted those to some mms, because I just thought it was a nicer vibe, and also because I was, like, trying to avoid playing the fiddle in the studio at all costs. Which is...
Rachel gets to play a lot of fiddle in her other band, if you're unaware.
I was like, this is the not fiddle project.
Well, it's good to have separate identities. But honestly, I think the mms actually lend itself well to a more gentle
approach. Exactly.
And I think it actually...
The kind of acoustic thing is...
Yeah.
It's a really different version, but... sorry. You can still hear me, right?
Yeah.
You could hear me. It's a different version, but... I love what he did with it originally as well. He's just more rock and roll than I am. One day, maybe. One day I'll be rock and roll.
One day. Old time rock and roll, right?
Yeah.
And I know you didn't write that last one, but you know, with your originals, one thing I love about multi instrumentalists that write original songs is how songs are sort of drawn to certain instruments, and certain instruments sort of guide the song in a different way. And I love hearing your songwriting voice sort of, I wouldn't necessarily say be catered, but sort of be influenced by the instrument that you're performing and writing on.
Yeah, totally. A lot of it's what I write it on, you know, because you just have these different chordal possibilities, different rhythmic possibilities. Like, clawhammer banjo is interesting because there's a lot of rhythms you kind of can't play. I mean, I can't play. Maybe someone could, but it's really not conducive to, like, certain rhythmic things, and it puts you into a certain rhythmic zone. When I was working with... 10 String Symphony on this album we did recently, we worked with a producer named Chris Drever, and he was talking about all the different pedals that he uses, and he was talking about how if there's an effect or a pedal that he's kind of interested in, he like tries to justify how much it costs by how many songs he thinks he can get out of having that pedal. So I'd be like, well, I bought this delay pedal and kind of now I'm sick of it and I don't use it, but I wrote like 6 songs inspired by this new effect. So I think playing different instruments can be that way too. You can pick up something new and all of a sudden you are out of your especially instruments that you're not very good at. Like, I find that that's a really good one because you don't have your go-to things. You're kind of doing things that are weird, maybe not the most cliche things, because you don't really know what you're doing. So
yeah, it's always exciting to explore new instruments. So.
It is. It's an addiction, isn't it?
It is. Totally. And, you know, one thing I wanted to chat with you about, I've seen a lot of attention online for Folk Fights Back. And I know it's a very recent organization, sort of a very new organization, but I'm already seeing it kind of all over the internet, and, you know, it's already having a pretty big impact. Do you want to share with listeners what that is, how it started? And
yeah, I would love to. So Folk Fights Back is kind of a musician-led political resistance organization. And so it just started after the recent presidential election, and there was just so much frantic energy among my friends. A lot of musicians having conversations about, you know, what do we do, what do we do? And I think, you know, for all of us, but for me, in the time that I was really starting to work on music, I really wasn't very politically active. You know, I don't think I voted in Senate elections that were off years, you know, things like that, where I really should have been paying attention. And now it sort of feels like, okay, cool. So you're going to be paying attention now. You know, it was kind of this wake up call for me. And I think for a lot of my friends. So We just really wanted to channel that energy in a way that felt like we were having some kind of positive impact. So we've started putting together these shows, and the idea is to have a show in all these different cities across the country on the same night so that we can kind of feel that solidarity with one another from different places. And so the first show we did, the cause that we picked was climate change, and this was at the end of January, and we had shows in Nashville and New York only, and we donated, so we raised all this money. All these musicians volunteered their time, and we raised a bunch of money, and we donated it to local nonprofits that were doing what we felt was really meaningful work towards change. So in Nashville, we donated to the Southern Environmental Law Center, and in New York, I think they donated to Earth Justice. And then it just started growing. So the next time we did a show, it was in support of immigrants and refugees, because that was just after the travel ban had been passed, and well, it had been put out and then it wasn't passed, but it grew. We had six cities doing shows that time. So we had shows in Stockholm, Sweden, Toronto, Chicago, Boston, New York, Oakland, California, Nashville, of course. So it was really cool to see, you know, once people kind of saw it happen, a lot of people were going, cool, like, let's do that. I can do that in my city, you know. All, you know, most musicians, you have a musician community, and I think because it's musician-led initiative, it's a little bit easier to say, hey, will you play for free? Because, you know, the people being asked know that the person asking understands what that means and isn't just saying, you know, you should just donate this for no reason. And one of the coolest things for me about the Folk Fights Back shows has been that we try to make them both a fundraiser and also sort of an activist event in themselves. So when we did Folk Fights Back for Women, you know, we had a ton of amazing women playing, performing, and same for the Immigrant and Refugee show. We had a bunch of immigrant and refugee performers, and it kind of showcases to the community all these different music bubbles that don't always mix. So there was this amazing like mariachi band that was playing, and I just hadn't even met those musicians ever, you know, in Nashville. And then the other thing is that we kind of all learn about these crazy nonprofits and these kind of heroes in our own cities that we don't even know about, you know, the work that they're kind of doing locally. So we did our show for women in Nashville, and we supported this group called The Better Balance. And that organization has been almost solely responsible for recently passing a bill that gives all Metro Nashville employees paid family and sick leave, which makes a huge difference for, especially for working women, because so often the family responsibilities, you know, fall on women, and sometimes they have to choose, am I going to go to work, or am I going to lose my job and, you know, take care of my sick kid or my sick grandmother or whatever. So it's been super rewarding, and we're kind of hoping that more cities will jump on the bandwagon. So
yeah, so if someone in, you know, Colorado wanted to get involved to see if there's a show here or maybe start a show, where could they find out information, and what's the next step?
Yeah, I think the best place right now is Facebook. We have a Facebook page, Folk Fights Back, and you can email folkfightsback@gmail.com or message the Facebook page. And we have a website, but it's not totally up yet. So I think for now, Facebook would be the best way. And yeah, we'd love for anybody who's interested in putting on a show to reach out, because the more, the better. So
very cool. Well, I think we have time for maybe one more tune. What did you have in mind to play?
Should we do, maybe we'll just do this quick fiddle tune?
Sure.
This isn't a tune that's on the new album, but it's more of just a fun thing that you might hear live. And it's a fiddle tune that I wrote for my New Zealander friends, George is also a New Zealander, but actually I have so many New Zealand friends. These are different New Zealand friends. It's called Arrival of the Kiwis.
I thought this was for me.
I mean, oops.
Twin fiddle.
it's one of the great joys of life, twin fiddle, I think.
Yeah, for sure. That was great. And so is that an actual old time tune, or is that a little bit more contemporary, sort of in the style of old time?
Yeah, it's an original, so it's, you know, it's new, but it's like definitely in the style of old time. Yeah.
Very cool.
We call them new old time tunes.
No, it's great. So again, you've been listening to KGNU Boulder.
This has been The Cabaret this week, featuring Rachel Bayman, the Nashville-based artist who visited our studios in August of 2017. You can tune into The Cabaret every Sunday. You can tune into The Cabaret every Tuesday evening from 7 to 8 p.m. to hear music recorded live right here at KGNU Studios. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned for Corriente coming your way at the top of the hour.
I used to go out reckless, throwing myself at the next good time. But now I'm patient, now I wait. Now I've got something.
good evening. You are now tuned in to KGNU's Corriente. This is KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. Corriente is a two-hour-long Spanish radio program. We play a diverse set of music, featuring Latin American music from all around the world, and featuring many different genres encompassing Latin American music. My name is Danielle, and I will be your host for the next 2 hours, playing Latin music on your Tuesday night. In the background, this is a track by Taro Cactus, and the song is called Flor del Desierto. Thank you so much for listening on this Tuesday, and definitely stay tuned to a lot of music.
Support comes from the CU Museum of Natural History in Boulder, currently offering a new virtual experience of their popular paleontology hall, plus fresh exhibits and do-it-yourself activities, available online in both English and Spanish. More information can be found at colorado.edu/CU Museum.
Support comes from Pro Musica Colorado Chamber Orchestra, presenting Springtime, featuring Vivaldi's Spring and Summer with violinist Yumi Wong Williams, live streamed online May 1st at 7:30 p.m. More information at promusicacolorado.org.